Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. On Monday, the United States finished the evacuation process for troops in Afghanistan, one day ahead of the August 31 deadline set by President Biden. Since October of 2001, 800,000 U.S. service members have served there. More than 20,000 have been wounded, and somewhere between 2,300 and 2,500 U.S. military members have lost their lives in Afghanistan, including 13 lost in the bombing at Kabul airport last week. The Taliban is now in power. I want to turn to our veterans to begin to understand how at least some of them are feeling about this moment. Joining me today to discuss how our military veterans are coping on this last day of U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan is Tim Kudo, a Marine veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. Tim, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Your recent op-ed in the New York Times is entitled, "I Was a Marine in Afghanistan and We Sacrificed Lives for a Lie." Can you tell me, if you can, what you mean by that, especially in this moment?
I think for 20 years, we were kind of sold a bill of goods in Afghanistan as to what we could accomplish there. And that was presidents of both parties, first George Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and, you know, finally now President Biden ending the war. But during those times where we were, you know, continuing the war, escalating it, particularly the Obama surge, there was a belief sold to us that we could achieve the goals of nation building, of creating a stable democracy there, of training the Afghan security forces to repel the Taliban once we leave. And, you know, there's a whole narrative that all the generals in charge, all the presidents who took their advice and accepted it, you know, ultimately, we found out that they didn't believe themselves through, you know, reporting in The Washington Post about the Afghanistan papers. And so to realize that, you know, soldiers, sailors, airmen and Marines were just sent over there, thousands and thousands and thousands of them, to get injured and killed for something that nobody in charge really believed could be won was incredibly dispiriting. And I think we've seen in the end, particularly in the past few weeks, the rapid takeover of the country by the Taliban, just how fraudulent a lot of those lies were.
Dispiriting is a very understated word to use in this moment, and I appreciate that. But I'm also wondering what the long-term consequences might be already in a nation where so many don't trust our systems, our structures, to feel that particularly in this moment, in this space, the one thing your country should only ask you to do and be honest with you about, that maybe there is a reason to distrust, again, both parties on this question.
I think it's deeper than parties, though. I think there is an issue with the kind of trust that the American citizens give to people in uniform. Obviously, the American military has been one of the most trusted institutions in the United States for the past 10, 20 years, particularly during this time of war. And the fact is that many of those generals put on those uniforms, went to Congress and lied to the American people about what they were seeing on the ground, about their own personal beliefs about the ability to win the war. And then likewise, you know, the powers of the presidency kind of clothe them in a sense of trust when they stand there in front of the White House or in the Oval Office and they tell you, look, we're going to war. This is what we're doing. This is why it's important. I think people are inclined to give all presidents the benefit of the doubt. And the reality is that, you know, not only did they lie about a lot of these things, but they also were incredibly incompetent in their execution of the lies that they were trying to sell us on, too. You know, when we went over there to train the Afghan army, they put numbers on the board and they got the Afghan army and police up to 300,000 people, and that vanished overnight. So clearly there was just kind of a Ponzi scheme going on. And when, you know, the cards fell, the whole thing came tumbling down, not to mix metaphors. But I think this is the issue here, is that, you know, ultimately, the American people think that our military particularly can solve almost any problem. It's, quote unquote, the greatest military in the world, the most powerful military in the world. And in fact, it has incredibly limited use. It can accomplish very small tactical objectives. It can win battles, but it cannot transform a country. And it was a lie to believe that it could in the first place.
Tim, pause with me for just a moment. This is The Takeaway. We'll be right back. Back on The Takeaway, I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we've been talking about the effect of the withdrawal from Afghanistan and how that's being received by our military veterans. With me once again is Tim Kudo, a Marine veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. So Tim, I'm deeply interested in the point you were making as we took our break. So what is it that, rather than sort of labeling our military simply a failure, I think it's so important the way you were framing that. What is it that we can achieve with our military?
You know, it's a good question. Certainly counterinsurgency, which is what we attempted to do in both Iraq and Afghanistan with limited effects, may be too much for the American military, given how it's trained and equipped now and the priorities given to it to achieve. Certainly we can conduct a massive airlift at an airport to get more than 100,000, you know, Afghans and American civilians out of a dangerous country with loss of life, but minimal loss of life. And that's the reality of all war. There's going to be casualties. There's going to be people killed. And so we should accept that that's going to happen when we use our military in any way and try and minimize it, do everything in our power. But I think, you know, it's geared, the American military is geared towards high scale, high intensity conflict with other great powers, going against tanks and armored divisions and things of this nature. And the type of wars that we're fighting, particularly in the Middle East and Africa, aren't those kinds of wars. And even when we rely on special forces to do the kind of surgical strikes that I think a lot of Americans have become used to and just accept as, you know, an endemic part of our American killing abroad, even then we see that there's regularly serious issues with, you know, violations of the law of war, civilian deaths. And so we need to start looking beyond the military as a solution towards these problems and take a much more all of government approach. And I hope that as we transition away from the global war on terror, that, you know, we accept that problems are not just military problems to be solved, but are actually all of government's problems.
I'm wondering if you have a sense that the American people, maybe the American people through the American media, could have behaved in ways, in different ways over the course of the past 20 years. It's interesting to me that you talk about the withdrawal as something that was actually done well, right? Relatively limited loss of life, swift sort of getting folks out. But of course, it doesn't necessarily feel like that was done well because for once in about two decades, we've been focused very, very clearly on what is happening in Afghanistan. Should we have been paying more attention all along?
Yeah, I think there's been a tremendous skew in media coverage, both in terms of what's emphasized and what's given prioritization, which obviously the past week was given enormous media coverage across almost every outlet and station and paper. And the problem with that is that what you've seen is just what's been going on in Afghanistan for 20 years. The same Marines, sailors, airmen, soldiers getting killed, bombs going off, suicide vests, retaliations with drone strikes where large numbers of Afghan civilians are killed. I mean, that was just the steady state of the Afghanistan war for many, many years. And so for civilians to kind of turn in at the back end and be outraged and, you know, mourning at the Marine Corps Memorial in D.C. and they can't believe what's going on here. You know, it's like you should have just read page A10 of your paper every day for the past, you know, 20 years, and you would have seen this just constantly. And so I think for veterans like me who realize that as Americans basically tuned out, they in large part delegated that responsibility to the presidents and the generals who I have said, you know, have mismanaged this war. And so there's a huge burden that should fall on the American civilian for basically not caring at all about what was happening in Afghanistan until now.
Is there a way that you can imagine as we move forward, being able to direct the American civilian attention more clearly so that we are responsive and responsible to our service members who are, after all, doing this work on our behalf?
Yeah, I think there's two ways. So the first is our connection to Afghanistan doesn't end just because of our military withdrawal. There's still going to be a long, permanent commitment to that country and to its people. I think that would be a good thing. And that's something that the media should really focus on. But I also think that as we go forward, there will be another war somewhere at some time with some new generation. And we have to go back as well to the lessons of 2001, when after the attacks of 9/11, people were terrified, people were afraid, and there was just an enormous consensus that we should go to war. You know, even in the House that voted for the war resolution, you know, only a single rep, Representative Barbara Lee, opposed it. And I think part of that was because when these events happen, as we've seen in the past week with the withdrawal, the media, which shapes the public opinion, can become very, very pro-war, whether through conscious bias or unconscious bias, I don't really entirely know. But we should be aware of that, that we need to create space for diversity of opinions on issues of war and peace.
Tim Kudo, a Marine veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.